Chapter 17. It seems strange that Morris should have won any respect from the Durham family, but they did not dislike him. They only disliked people who wanted to know them well. It was a positive mania, and the rumour that a man wished to enter county society was a sufficient reason for excluding him from it. Inside, region of high interchange and dignified movements that meant nothing, were to be found several who, like Mr. Hall, neither loved their fate nor feared it, and would depart without a sigh if necessary. The Durhams felt they were conferring a favour on him by treating him as one of themselves, yet were pleased he should take it as a matter of course, gratitude being mysteriously connected in their minds with ill-breeding. Wanting only his food and his friend, Morris did not observe he was a success, and was surprised when the old lady claimed him for a talk towards the end of his visit. She had questioned him about his family, and discovered the nakedness thereof, but this time her manner was deferential. She wanted his opinion of Clive.
"Mr. Hall, we wish you to help us. Clive thinks so much of you. Do you consider it wise for him to stop up a fourth year at Cambridge?"
Morris was wanting to wonder which horse he should ride in the afternoon. He only half attended, which gave an appearance of profundity.
"After the deplorable exhibition he has made of himself in the Tripos, is it wise?"
"He means to," said Morris. Mrs. Durham nodded.
"There, you have gone to the root of the matter. Clive means to. Well, he is his own master. This place is his. Did he tell you?"
"No."
"Oh, Penge is his absolutely, under my husband's will. I must move to the Dower House as soon as he marries."
Morris started. She looked at him, and saw that he had coloured. "So there is some girl," she thought. Neglecting the point for a moment, she returned to Cambridge, and observed how little a fourth year would profit a yokel. She used the word with gay assurance, and how desirable it was that Clive should take his place in the countryside. There was the game, there were his tenants, there were finally politics.
"His father represented the division, as you doubtless know."
"No."
"What does he talk to you about?"
she laughed.
"Anyhow, my husband was a member for 7 years, and though a Lib is in now, one knows that cannot last. All our old friends are looking to him, but he must take his place, he must fit himself. And what on earth is the good of all this, I forget what, advanced work? He ought to spend a year travelling instead. He must go to America, and if possible the colonies. It has become absolutely indispensable."
"He speaks of travelling after Cambridge. He wants me to go."
"I trust you will. But not Greece, Mr. Hall. That is travelling for play. Do dissuade him from Italy and Greece."
"I prefer America myself."
"Naturally. Anyone sensible would. But he's a student, a dreamer. Pippa says he writes verse. Have you seen any?"
Morris had seen a poem to himself. Conscious that life grew daily more amazing, he said nothing. Was he the same man who 8 months back had been puzzled by Risley? What had deepened his vision? Section after section, the armies of humanity were coming alive. Alive, but slightly absurd. They misunderstood him so utterly. They exposed their weakness when they thought themselves most acute. He could not help smiling.
"You evidently have." Then suddenly, "Mr. Hall, is there anyone, some Newnham girl? Pippa declares there is."
"Pippa had better ask, then," Morris replied. Mrs. Durham was impressed. He had met one impertinence with another. Who would have expected such skill in a young man? He seemed even indifferent to his victory, and was smiling to one of the other guests, who approached over the lawn to tea. In the tones that she reserved for an equal, she said,
"Impress on him about America, anyhow. He needs reality. I noticed that last year."
Morris duly impressed when they were riding through the glades alone.
"I thought you were going down," was Clive's comment. "Like them. They wouldn't look at Joey."
Clive was in full reaction against his family. He hated the worldliness which they combined with complete ignorance of the world.
"These children will be a nuisance," he remarked during a canter.
"What children?"
"Mine. The need of an heir for Penge. My mother calls it marriage, but that was all she was thinking of."
Morris was silent. It had not occurred to him before that neither he nor his friend would leave life behind them.
"I shall be worried eternally.
They've always some girl staying in the house as it is.
Just go on growing old.
Hey, boy?
Nothing, said Morris, and reined up. An immense sadness. He believed himself beyond such irritants had risen up in his soul. He and the beloved would vanish utterly, would continue neither in heaven nor on earth. They had won past the conventions, but nature still faced them, saying with even voice, Very well, you are thus. I blame none of my children, but you must go the way of all sterility. The thought that he was sterile weighed on the young man with a sudden shame. His mother or Mrs. Durham might lack mind or heart, but they had done visible work. They had handed on the torch their sons would tread out. He had meant not to trouble Clive, but out it all came as soon as they lay down in the fern. Clive did not agree.
Why children? He asked. Why always children? For love to end where it begins is far more beautiful, and nature knows it.
Yes, but if everyone... Clive pulled him back into themselves. He murmured something about eternity in an hour. Morris did not understand, but the voice soothed him.